Welcome to the Diary of a Sales Expert podcast. My name's James White, and I'm on a mission to help business owners and sales professionals all over the world get incredible sales results. So thanks for listening, and let's get started.
All right, well, welcome to another edition of Diary of a Sales Expert podcast. It's a real privilege and pleasure to have a fantastic lady who's been in the business development world and the sales and financial services world for some time now. And I've got Bobby Tohoto with me today to share her story and some of her journey on being a successful, fantastic lady in the financial services industry. So Bobby, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for being here. So look, so for those who don't know you, tell us a bit about your background and what got you into you know, because obviously you've got a role where you're business development director, which, you know, if people know, business development has a sort of sales responsibility. Tell me a bit about your background and what got you into that role, and then we'll open up some things about your sort of method for operating.
So it was quite accidental how I got into business development, because it wasn't something that I planned to go in. So in terms of my career history in the financial services, it started up when I was 20 at the West Bromwich Building Society as a customer service advisor. I didn't really know what I wanted to do. didn't know what I wanted to do, but I just thought it's probably somewhere where I can build a career. Never ever did I want to actually be a financial advisor, or never. To be honest, I didn't even know what they did. So when I joined the West Bromwich Building Society, and I think it was quite, it has been quite critical in terms of my whole career, is the people that I was around. So the leadership team were very kind of focused on personal development, growth, and I had the opportunity then to be involved in sort of some of the kind of external courses and things like they did, so professional development. And my probably turning point in my career was having the opportunity to do a 3-day event in London Excel with Anthony Robbins on one of his...
Well, you're walking through the fire, basically. When he said, unleashing the power within, basically, was it?
That, I think that's when it was like kind of, it kind of opened my mind up to kind of other areas rather than traditional route of being what at the time I thought was, you know, you come in, you do a job, and there's only one way to do a job, if that makes sense. So I think at the time I was, might have been a savings advisor, different roles within the West Brom Building Society. But I knew that if I put my mind to something, I could achieve it. So because, as I said, at the time, the leadership team were very kind of focused that way, that was kind of the start of my journey with regards to kind of delving deeper in terms of things like the law of attraction, vision boards, goal setting, performance. And that, I would say, has been the basis of the foundation of my career, in having the right people around and kind of opening up those doors in terms of the possibilities. And again, like throughout West Bromwich Building Society, so I worked as a customer service advisor, then went into like savings advising, did mortgage advising for 5 years, and then financial planning manager. Every single one of those roles, achieved like awards, top advisor, team awards and things like that. And I think probably the biggest success during my early years of my career was following the Anthony Robbins and going on to the financial planning route, was I set myself a goal in my first financial year of I wanted to be financial advisor of the year. Now, there were some big hitters within the industry, but I got there. I was, at the time, I think I was about 6 months pregnant at the time, so I was having my son, but I didn't want to, I think there was that bit in me, in I didn't want to be that advisor that's, oh, she's going to have a baby and she's not, you know, she's not, because women are kind of like put in that box that what's happening,
they were, you know, what, not so much now, but they were
not so much now, as in that's it, like she's gone to have a child and she's going to come back and she's not going to be as motivated. But I actually remember like receiving the financial planning manager award when I was I remember the picture because I was pregnant. I can't remember how many months I was, but that for me that was quite a big thing in terms of like with everything, my first full year in financial planning, and I've achieved like the ultimate accolade amongst all these big hitters. I think from then on it was always like, well, if I put something down, and it was something that I put on my vision board.
Yeah.
And that's when I really started to kind of delve more into like the goal setting and mindset, belief, and setting myself quite ambitious goals and targets. And then when I, as I said, when I started to see that success, I implemented it with the teams that I worked in as well. So I said I had good, what, 12 years at the West Bromwich Building Society. I probably got a bit comfortable then.
Yeah.
Got comfortable.
At that point, though, we always, because obviously, if you were in a customer service, a customer advisory role, we always really good with people back then. Was that a skill that you felt you'd had, or, you know, you were able to develop?
I don't think I was, because I wasn't the most talkative person. Like, I remember when I first joined, and it was a bit of a shell shock because I was 20 and I had like either side of me two. I remember actually there was Sheila on one side and Brenda on one side, the two customer service advisors at the time who had had years of experience. And I was quite bored. I was like, and they used to chat to the customers coming in, and I was thinking, what do I even talk to these people about? So I was actually very, very quiet. I was quiet, but I was quietly confident, because whereas they were good with talking, I was like very focused on this is how many, like at the time, I had to make book appointments.
Yeah.
But it was how I saw it. So I saw it as in, and I think this is with any role that you're in, if you genuinely believe in what you're providing, and I know we've come out of the podcast and we said we're talking about sales, but it's not really sales, it's providing that service. So people talk about, oh, are you in sales? I think that's what it's not really right, because it is a service industry.
I agree more. There's a phrase I used to be, I say to people, great salespeople, people have this misconception that sales is all about pushing someone to do something they don't want to do. I always talk about people being, the great salespeople are problem solvers. They actually listen to people and they try and find out what's going on in that person's world and then help them solve an issue. Because people only buy it because of a problem, right? If there's a problem or desire to do something, that's the only reason someone's going to buy it. So it's becoming a problem.
Yeah, definitely. So as I said, when I initially started my career in, because like as a customer service, it was like a cashier role. I was only in it for like 12 months before I moved on and progressed in my exams and things like that. But even then, my role wasn't to sell them or give them advice, because I wasn't qualified to do it. It was just to get them in front of an advisor to sell the benefits of that advisor. So in terms of that, like, that was the biggest thing, is we, as customers, we believed in the people that we were putting these clients in front on what they were doing. And it all comes down to the whole kind of training aspect of it with anything. If you genuinely believe that whatever you're trying to achieve is for the benefit of the person that you're serving, then it's a win-win.
I think that's such a brilliant way to look at it. And again, you know, we're going to talk about business development and our YouTube, but that's such a great, refreshing way actually to think about it, especially when it comes down to money, which is what we'll talk about in a bit later on, which is where you've, you know, made your career, because that's a very sensitive area for a lot of people. So actually there is that concern that people feel that they've been pushed in a direction that they don't want to go in, or that they get, you know, asked to do something they want to. Whereas actually if you're trying to really help someone solve an issue or deal with something that's going on in their mind, then actually they warm to it, don't they? And that's probably why you've had the success you've had.
I think the thing it comes down to is trust. Yeah. There's got to be that element of trust in terms of it shows, doesn't it? You know, like you say, if you've got that somebody pushing in, they're trying to sell you something you might not even need. It's like they say, like buys to Eskimo, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is that. What's the point? But if you can genuinely find that need and that connection as to why, then it shows. It's the point that pull, like not just in, like as I said, the customer service role, but as a financial planner. And it's going in with that mindset, because there are advisors, and I've been in the industry for a long time, where they're very target driven to their needs as opposed to the client's needs. So you've got the traditional old school salespeople that are badgering them about, I need this income, you've got no appointments, and all that kind of like nonsense. But that shows as well. So if they're going in to see a client with the view that I need to get this because I've got my sales manager on my back, that is evident to the client. But if you're going in on the basis that, like with everything I was saying, like I just kind of just keep an open mind, like I don't know what at the end of this meeting what it's going to result to. Either way, if it's something that we can progress, I'll tell you. If it's something that I don't think that you need, I'll tell you either way. Like for me, it's like I've done my job correctly if I put you on the right track, whether it's with me or not with me, because you don't need that. And that's where you didn't say something.
You're going to say
I think that's where the whole trust building comes in, because if you are genuinely, serving the person in front of you, even if it doesn't help you in your sales figures or there's an outcome out of it, that you don't know the ripple effects of you doing the right thing. It's doing that right thing, because so many, like I've been successful throughout my career, and predominantly a lot of my clients have come through recommendation. How many some people I don't even know that they, you know, they've got my number off someone, and it's not even clients, it's maybe someone I've had conversation with or initial meeting with, and it's not gone anywhere, but I've been quite open and truthful about, you know, I actually, this is what, you know, there's no kind of benefit to the business or to me, but actually for you, I don't think it's the right thing, and I think you should kind of, and just pointing them in the right direction. But it instills that confidence, doesn't it, in the industry as well, or the profession, should have
said. So I wanted to interrupt the podcast just because I want to ask one small favour. If you really enjoy the podcast, could you do me a favour and just give us a review? Just head on over to your podcast network and just basically put in a review and tell other people what you think to it. Because the more reviews we get and the more referrals we get of the podcast, we can help more people out. That would be amazing. It would help me deliver great podcasts for the next however long. Now back to the podcast.
You know, when I talk to so many people about sales, it's one of the old methods on which I've approached the whole element. You know, I used to be with desperation's a stinky aftershave or perfume, right? If you're in a desperate environment where you're trying to hit a number and I call it that element whereby you're trying to look like you're too keen for the business, it puts people off you, right? It puts people off you. It's like, yeah. I said to people, sales is like, you know, I always say to people, sales is like dating. And I always say to people, if you go on a date with someone, the first thing they said to you is, do you want to get married? You'd be like, back off. but people go into this in procession that they've got to try and push something down someone's path. That's not what it's about. And it's so refreshing to hear. So that's why you've been successful, because when you've got that sense of what's right for the other person, what's right for that buyer. And I guess I'll lead them on the next question. That's why questions are so important, right? Because you ask great questions to find out what's driving people and to find out what's
really...
Exactly.
And that's what it's not. It should be, there should be an agenda, but it should be the client's agenda in terms of what's important to them now going forward, and setting that tone as a financial planner, my job is to educate them around what their kind of current position is. Whether they take my advice or not, that's up to them. If I'm doing my job correctly and I've explained the reasons why, because the clients that will get the best from the service are the ones that are open and you've got the full picture. Because I've seen it before when I've gone into client meetings from other advisors and I've picked up, say, the previous kind of notes and fact find. And when I go and meet them, they don't tally, and they don't tally because they probably haven't felt comfortable in telling them. And then all of a sudden I find all these are their assets that they're not disclosed because they only want to speak to them about that because that's all they've spoken about. So again, that's a disservice.
Yeah. One of the questions was actually, you know, what so many people get nervous talking about money, don't they? I guess, yeah, but, and, you know, what makes, and you just, you know, I was going to ask you, why do you think that is? And you probably answered the question, is because they don't feel comfortable engaging with the other person, basically, and sharing that information.
It's quite worrying, actually. When, you know, I've had picked up clients that have been with their advisor for like 20 years, sometime 15, 20 years. For example, if we've in previously where previous firm where we've acquired a business, and you know, may have had a pension that advisor's looked after. Well, probably not looked after, taking a commission and just let it run. Like,
yeah, just let it just be responsible for it, but not responsible for it. Maybe.
Yeah, taking a cut just because they started it up, and then you go and see them and you talk to them about what you do, and they're like, "Well, I've got this, and this," but I thought he was the pensions guy because that's all they ever talked about. So that in itself, like, again, and I think this is where, in terms of the FCA regulations, consumer duty, it's brilliant because having that in place has set the bar in terms of the professionalism and the standards that are set. So what, you know, certain firms and advisors have got away with in taking client ongoing money, eating into their, you know, their pensions, their children's inheritances, that's something that is really a focus for the FCA at the moment.
I think we're going to see maybe, I could be wrong, but I think we're going to see a number of bits of legal elements in the next few years of money, you know, the same way as lots of claim elements coming back. I think we're going to see that in time. But we've digressed into lots of areas and we've got away from your career, which is great because you're talking about the stuff that you... But at what point did you know then that you were pretty good at this sort of business development sales angle then? At what point did your career...
No, it's actually funny. Like, it's because I haven't really been in business development. Like, the title, it's only in this current role with Attivo, 6 months I've had the title of business development. I've probably done it to some degree, but not had the title. So when people say that, how long about the actual role, the title, business development director, like that has only been over the last 6 months. And that is purely because, you know, I met with this chairman, CEO, it was him that suggested it. He was like, "Oh, have you ever thought about that?" And I was like, "Oh no, this is." And he was like, "I think you'd be really." So it was him that suggested. I do enjoy it because it doesn't matter whether it's a client or an introducer, a stakeholder, partner, etc. It's just being able to connect with people, and having those kind of relationships where you can work together. I think that's what it is.
But it's funny because I know you say you're not, you know, this is what I love about doing these podcasts, because when you say, "Oh, I'm not naturally in the, yeah, it's not an area of role," but the fact of the things you talked about are what make great sales and business development, whether it's sales or business development, that's what makes good salespeople, is the ability to focus on the client, really what the client cares about, the ability to be able to ask great questions and find out, be curious. I always say to people, be curious. Be curious about the other person. Be interested in them. But, you know, be interested, not interesting, is the phrase I always use. You know, and actually be interested in what that person's doing. And if that, like you say, that you can't sell to them, if they want A and you offer B, hey, that's okay, right? Because the chances are they're going to say to you, oh, thanks for being so honest, Bobby. And then the next time I go and speak to someone, I'll say, do you know what? This lady I met was lovely. She was able to recommend something for me that was better for me. And yeah, they'll keep an eye out for you in that other in their other conversations, won't they? Which helps you a lot.
I think as well, this is where, in terms of the whole business development, your traditional breakfast, networking, meetings and all that kind of stuff. Although I think I love the kind of face-to-face and meeting, I just don't feel that sometimes that setting, everybody's got an agenda. Where I think, like now, in terms of where business development and having that online presence, LinkedIn, it just gives people a little bit of a snapshot of what you're about, whether that's your values, what you know, what you're interested in. I do feel like, in terms of, obviously we connected today because of LinkedIn. So you've seen it. I've connected with Sam Oates and did a podcast with him. And that was just purely from the back of a post that resonated with him. And, you know, I pick up, like, introduce clients that want to work with him because there's something there. And in this day and age, your clients will research you and have a look and look at your LinkedIn to get a bit of an idea before they actually commit to kind of choosing you and sort of having you as a someone trusted that they want to work with. So I do feel that the way, in terms of business development, it is really changing. And I said, like, LinkedIn for me has been brilliant. There's so much opportunity that's come from it.
Well, I couldn't agree more. I don't know. I've been having conversations with a number of, you know, organizations, financial organizations that I work with, and their teams, to say, look, get familiar with LinkedIn, use it. But just going back to some of the, you know, because I think, you know, from what, you know, our conversations and from watching the, you know, the interview you did before, which is a great podcast interview, you know, I can sense who you are and what you're about. But what do you think some of the biggest mistakes that you've seen other people in the financial industry make when it comes to business development? Because you're very good at it, because you're naturally, because you focus on the client. But what are some of the, you know, you mentioned about that sort of desperation, but is there anything else in particular that you see others that are, let's call it, more traditional, that you think, actually, that's you're doing this wrong?
I just think that, like, you know, I see your traditional one will be kind of like going out and taking people for lunches and hospitality and all that kind of stuff, which is great for the person that you're entertaining. But if they don't connect with you, they're not. It doesn't matter if you meet them once for a coffee or you take them to Cheltenham races. It makes no difference. They will, and this is what I say, like, not everybody is going to connect with you. So you've got to find the people that will connect, and everybody's different. There's different people will kind of warm to kind of different
miles.
Personalities or, yeah. So I think it's, but that's where you're going to get that buy-in, because if there's that connection, like, for example, I know people that are on LinkedIn, they've got a presence, etc. You might not get somebody that's commenting or liking or whatever, but people are watching.
Yeah.
They are watching. And I've had, like I know, like, if I wanted a professional in a certain area, because of what I've seen, I know who I'd approach, whether it's an accountant, solicitor, marketing, because I've seen and I've, just there's something about them that has resonated with me. So actually, I don't need this service now, but if I did, this is who I'd go to.
Yeah. And I think it also, getting about LinkedIn and those sort of tools, is that you also start to see, I always call it a congruency, right? You start to see who people really are, you know, across multiple. I mean, there's a lot of, I'm sure you've seen it before, the 7-11-4, where you need 7 hours of content across 11 interactions across 4 media to trust someone. And if you watch videos and content and materials and see them on LinkedIn and see messages, you build up a picture of people, don't you? People build up a picture of you, and it's that. And they're not seeing you being a Bobby here and a different Bobby over here. They're seeing the same person. They go, yeah, she's pretty honest, she's true, I can trust this person because she's not a difference in one with the other. And I think that's one of the few things that people try and do in selling. They try and be something different that they're not.
Yeah, and that's the thing, and that really does, it shines through, doesn't it, in terms of, I mean, I hate the word authentic, but it is, isn't it? It's being your authentic self, and You know, it doesn't matter whether you're kind of like speaking to somebody on a Monday or a Friday, your message is consistent. Yeah. And that's just simple, really. Like, I think people complicated on their times.
Exactly. Well, so you know, you moved into there, but what's, you have been very successful with clients and engagement. What are some of the sort of key, you know, top two or three tips that you use when you're engaging with someone for the first time that you think are, you know, just that are the critical things that you use to build that rapport and build that engagement with people initially? Is there anything in particular that, you know, others listening can learn from you in that respect?
What you just said is listen. Like, that's a big, like, learning to listen, but also kind of, it's quite a skill being able to kind of get people to talk as well. So I think, well, let's say, like, in terms of the trust, it is that kind of like, you know, when you talked about in terms of people can smell it a mile off, that cheap aftershave or whatever. Like, it is your energy and your aura that has that effect on whether someone feels relaxed,
yeah,
or not to talk to you. But it's like the little things, like if I'm having a conversation with somebody, I need to make sure that I'm present and I'm giving them like my time, and I'm not. And this is why, like, in meetings, like, I see some advisors take their laptops and they're typing away, but it kind of puts that barrier in place. So for me, if I'm, like, I use a one-page document. If I'm going to see a client, there is that there's information that I need to, I'm not going to retain everything, but I don't use screens because I see that as a barrier. I use a one-page document, but I'm looking at them, eye contact, and I'm listening. That really is key. And then, as I said, like, it's having that genuine, not looking for an outcome, but looking at, is there a potential area in terms of how can I help this person or how can I serve this person? And if I can't, you know what, just be honest and
say, hey, it's okay, we can't work this out, basically. We need to let you know each other go, and we've only lost half hour of time or whatever. That's how I think.
I think, as I said, it's a two-way thing, isn't it? When you're going to meet a client in their home, there's so many conversation points, isn't there? And it's just finding that one thing that you resonate with. I actually remember quite early on in my career, it was actually before I had my son, one of my sales managers, they were called sales managers at the time, observed an interview with me, and he was like, Bobby, he said, I don't know how you convert these clients, he said, because you don't build rapport. And I was like, what do you mean? And he was like, you're not interested in what they do. And I was like, I'm not interested, this is my words. So I don't like doing all that mushy stuff, because I was younger. I wasn't really interested about grandchildren, children. I didn't have any children of my own. Like, and to me, I was like, I don't like doing all that mushy stuff. But anyway, same sales manager, after I'd had a child, like after my son, I came back and he observed me. His name's Paul. Paul said, oh my God, you're like a different person. He was like, what's happened to you? You're asking them about your children. And I said, because I am actually interested now. I wasn't before. And that is part of, as you grow up and your life experiences, and there's something that connects you with that client. So obviously in the building society, I had a lot of older clients, and I probably hadn't, I was quite young. I didn't really travel that much. There was nothing really that I could connect with them. And then he'd say, like, well, you ask the question, but you're not really interested. I was like, oh, what are you doing today? So I'll do the normal kind of chit chat, but I wasn't that interested. And he'll say, well, I used to be like, well, what do you mean? And he said, well, they just told you they're going to pick up the grandson. Why didn't you ask them? And I was like, I'm not interested, Paul. I'm not interested, Paul. So if I'm not interested, why am I going to make out that I am? Because I'm not. It's just, and I think that is me. Like, if I'm not interested, I'm not interested, and I won't. Obviously, life experience and age and like all that kind of stuff. You become a different person. I think children definitely change you. Well, my child does.
Just said something there, which I think, again, you've said so many, again, you probably don't, you know, there's so many golden nuggets that you've shared here about actually about being interested in that person. And I was talking to people about, you know, there's a method I use in a conversation called LAPS, which is listen, ask, probe, and summarize. And I always say to people, if you probe when someone says, oh, we've had a rough day, and you go and go, okay, move on to the next question, they're going to be a bit at the back. Whereas if it's, oh, so sorry to hear that, what's been happening? Now, of course, you know, oh, well, we had the, you know, problem with the roof in the garage. Oh, no, what's been happening? What's going on? You know, all right, you don't want to go on and spend 45 minutes talking about this garage. But you want to, they actually then feel that you've listened to them and you actually understood the fact they've got a roof and problem in the garage. And then they feel a bit listened to and warm to. And it warms them too. And that's part of that active listening process, isn't it? To then, and also, as I say, to probe and probe with empathy, I always say, but just to dig a little bit more deeper, tell me what's been happening there and what's gone on. And, oh, right, you mentioned this. And it just builds that affinity.
It builds that. But like I said, like, you know, people say, like, when did you realise, like, it's because of, obviously, the training, the development, the people that I've, like, my, like, mentors that I've had over the years that's helped me now to get to a stage where I don't think anybody's a finished article, because you can always learn and the world's changing and all that kind of stuff. But I do feel that when, like as you develop, you kind of find things. You pick, like I said, little nuggets off different people. And if I said to somebody, this is what I do, you do, that's not going to work, because what's natural and easy for me might not be for somebody else. But yeah, it's, I think people, when you do well, people think that you're naturally kind of good, and it's always been that way. But yeah, it is kind of learning along the way. And I always say, and people don't believe it, I used to be really quiet, like people laugh, and I used to be quite quiet, although I was confident. And I actually remember when I was at the West Warren Building Society, before I became a financial planning manager, I was a mortgage advisor, and I did that 5 years, did really, really well. But I'd done my exams, and I remember that it does come down to leadership. So my manager at the time pushed me forward to go and do the exams. And there was somebody else at the time, because I was so quiet, I was classed as a risk. I was a risk, because how's she going to talk to, like, how's she going to talk to clients? But it was because that one person believed me and pushed me through, because they knew, obviously, they saw something in me that would push me forward. I said, like, consistently, year on year, I was in, like, the top five and mortgage advisor of the year. So it's like, you've got to sometimes just have the right people that will help you progress your career. And this is why leadership is so, so important for people that want to kind of progress in their career.
So have you been enjoying listening to the podcast? If you have, then I've got a new sales plan course that I think you'll find incredibly helpful. You can find all the details you need at www.ineedasalesplan.com. And the sales plan course has been put together with my years of experience of building and helping supporting salespeople all over the world and business owners get incredible sales results. I've implemented thousands of plans with companies, with my previous company, with my current business. And this plan is going to give you everything you need to be able to identify how to deliver on a target or goal that you have to achieve for your business. It's got everything you want to put in place there. It's got all resources on different stages of the process, how to identify the right target customer, how to engage with them, how to create content, how to hit a sales target, a target template. It's got everything you need in there to get great results. So have a little look at www.ineedasalesplan.com. It's a great resource that I'm sure if you start to utilize it, you're going to be able to hit the plans that you want. Now back to the podcast. It's such a great point. And I was listening to a podcast the other day when someone was talking about leadership being about stretch. What was a great phrase? You like this, I'm sure, which is stretch people so that they feel safe, but also make sure that they're safe even though you stretch them. So the idea being is that you've got that safety blanket to be able to know, you know, if something happens that they've got your back and they're going to support you, but push them and give them that challenge, give them that sort of element.
But this is, this is the thing, James, isn't it? It's like when we've spoken a lot about like kind of sales, we've mentioned the word sales a lot. And I also think in terms of like the old school, in financial services, the old school sales manager kind of that role, there is a clear difference between management and leadership. I've seen it, like, you know, with the traditional, like your management, and there is a place for that, but you generally tend to find that managers create followers, whereas leaders create leaders, and they will empower and they will get the best out of people. So again, like I said, in terms of, career and, career and opportunities for someone starting off, I always feel like I've had like mentors throughout my kind of career, both in work and outside of work. Over the last few years, I've had external like mentors, people that have worked in the past, but not in the business that I'm in now, because I do feel that sometimes that your manager can't be your mentor because it creates a bit of a conflict. Depending on what their agenda is. Like you say, if you treat people well enough, that Richard Branson saying, isn't it? Treat them kind of well enough that they want to stay, but allow them to grow and kind of create those opportunities for them. So I do feel that like having a mentor in place gives you that unbiased kind of opinion. Right. And it also stops you from making like bad decisions. And because I'm one of those people that I kind of make decisions on emotion.
Yeah.
And I probably would have made some silly mistakes had I not sounded off to somebody else. And just having a balanced view of actually, you know what, having this and I did it, what's your take on it? And then when you look at it from both angles, it gives you a different perspective as opposed to, you're going to get a different answer if you go to your manager, your leader, or your chairman, whoever it is, whoever you report into, because that's going to be very company biased.
Yeah, and I think you're quite right. And that sort of, like you said, leadership and mentorship and training and support is actually something that I think a lot of companies don't do enough of right now. I mean, I'm reading a book at the moment, actually, the qualified sales leader. I mean, that's sales related, but it's talking about actually how, you know, it's all about actually the best way to be that support mechanism, that you know, you mentioned about Ian going out with you on to see a client, right? Okay, going out with you to see that client. How many people now go out with their clients, with their team? Very few in some cases, okay? Now, yeah. It may happen to some organizations, that hopefully it does, but very few, because managers are really busy. They've got numbers to hit and things to do, whatever else. But that level of support that Ian gave you at that time, which you then reflect...
I know, it's more...
Paul, sorry, apologies. I'm not Paul wrong. But you did say it, Ian. I'm sure you did. I think you bit, maybe, no, maybe, maybe you did. Maybe you did. I haven't listened properly. There's my active listening. But with Paul, but Paul's advice is what he gave you there helped you change. It helped you evolve, right? And it's huge doing that for people.
I didn't have a choice because we had to have observatories.
Okay, fair enough.
Back in the building society, like that's as part of the compliance, as they sat in on your meetings. I think I see so much where in our profession, you've got all these companies doing these training academies, but they're actually not providing the support. So yeah. You'll get people on a 6 month, 12 month, 2 year, whatever academy, and all it is they're doing their exams and then they're out there, but they've had no coaching, mentoring, they've not gone out with advisors and like developed in that sense, where I think that's one of the things I do feel that within Attivo, we have a structured kind of career plan in terms of different options that you can take. Exams and qualifications are very important for a chartered firm. But in terms of the level of support, our most experienced associate directors, they're all chartered. You know, we are a chartered firm, but they will have like trainee advisors that will come and join them in their meetings, help them do the reports. That level of training, you don't get that everywhere. It is a case of, you know, you do your exams, sit on a 2-week course or something and learn a process and out there you go. And you have to kind of just find yourself.
Since you mentioned that, I was actually talking to a colleague in the industry based in Essex, and who is involved in the Institute of Personal Finance Society. And he was saying that a lot of their younger financial planners, they're looking to do some training, and we're having a discussion around that. But he was saying a lot of them don't have this soft skill training, as he calls it. They don't have someone going out and giving them that ideas of how to build that knowledge. I think it's really important. So on that point, actually, if you were, and we're conscious of time because I could talk to you all day about your stuff because I love the values and the models and the methods you approach things with. But if you were listening to this as, let's say, a younger Bobby when you were sort of in your, you know, when you started out maybe on your financial planning sort of career, or maybe you've been growing your career and you're building out, what would be the sort of top 2 or 3 things, bits of advice that Bobby would give, you know, those people now in terms of how to build better relationships with clients and to how to build a book of business, for want of a better phrase? And because that's what everyone wants to do. They want to be successful and grow. But you know, what advice would you give people that are starting on that journey now?
Yeah, I would say develop your network. Yeah, as I say, your network is your net worth. have a mentor in place, preferably somebody that's been in the industry, and they will help you with the opportunities and put you in touch with people that will be able to help you. I would say possibly with anything that you do, you know, there's no point in, what does success look like? Have clear goals in place, because, you know, we talk about people are looking to be successful, but what's successful to me may be something completely different to somebody else. Like, everybody's
got... What does success look like, right?
Yeah, be specific on your goals. What are your goals? What do you want to achieve? Write them down. Have a plan in place by when. Because unless you write those goals... That's one thing I've always done, like, in... my, you know, obviously we've always had targets, but I've always broken them down. This is what I want. And I normally add about 20% on top because I want to do more than, and there's not a time where I've not achieved a target. Like, that's just because I've done it the right way. I've been genuine in terms of what I want. Like, you know, as I said, like, the outcome is to be able to help a client. And as I said, that will come, but without having clear, defined goals, how do you know what success looks like?
I talked about a target. If you don't know, you know, so, you know, Zig Ziglar used to say, if you don't know where you're heading, then you'll drift into the rocks, right? It's just like a ship doesn't leave, it doesn't leave the port and go, oh, where should we go today?
Yeah.
You're going from port A to port B, and they've got a clear path. And even though there may be waves and whatever else that buffer them out of that direction, that's their pathway. But it's about having that clear pathway in that respect, isn't it? So unfortunately, if people don't have that, it's gonna be a challenge. And that is a difficult thing, I think, for a lot of people though in nowadays. And people don't have those goals and that vision. But you know, you mentioned a vision board. I've got a vision board, but you maybe didn't get the chance to go to
yeah. So I think as well, you know, I would say, like, we invest as businesses, we invest in exams, like, you know, we're paying for people's exams, but actually we're not actually investing in people.
Yeah,
we're not. Like, and if I look back in terms of my successes, where I've been successful and, you know, turned branches around, had record years and things like that, my success isn't just based on my success, it's based on the leadership. Yeah. In terms of how they have helped me, which has then enabled me to kind of push that back and get my team involved. So, like, as I said, any business, like your people are your the foundation to your success, and creating that culture where people are aligned with the business values, the mission statement, all that. That is crucial. When people feel part of something, it has that kind of ripple effect.
I couldn't agree with you more. And there's a great stat that I share from a good guy called Elliot Dexter on there, and he talks around how, especially millennials, who are the sort of next generation of workers. You know, there's this great stat that Harvard Business Review shared, which was 86% of millennials think that a company's job is to make a social impact, whereas only 34% of millennials think a company's job is to make profit. So actually, if you think about that element around where people are going to go, they want to be on a pathway to a direction somewhere, to a mission, a vision, something big, isn't it? It's not just about the company making money, which was the old sort of school side of it.
Well, and also I think, like, it's not, like you just said, it doesn't matter. People's priorities and what they want, it's not all about money. Like, it's not. If you can pay somebody and keep paying, but that's not going to keep them to stay. If they don't feel part of something, if they don't feel aligned, if they don't feel part of, like, that their values are aligned, then eventually the money aspect of it only lasts so long.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It's about creating that vision I say it to a lot of organizations. Like, if you go back to when NASA, you know, years ago, when they interviewed the cleaner at NASA, and they said to him, you know, what's your job? He said, I'm here to help put a man on the moon. Yeah, back then it was that, even though they were the cleaner, it was still, the job was to get someone on the moon, basically. And it's getting everyone involved in that bigger picture, isn't it? And
I suppose it's like when we look at, people talk about branding, external, like your branding of your products, etc. I actually think, like, your biggest kind of marketing tool are your people, your internal brand. Your biggest advocates are your people that work with you within that business. Your biggest brand advocates, that's the best marketing. You can have the best logo, people think that's brand, but actually it's everything else that underpins it. And it's not just about, you know, we're going to recognize this set of people, for example, financial planners, because they bring in the money. Without those, like, without the people that do all the administration and the power planning and all that support, that wouldn't come. So it's just making sure that everybody feels that they're valued. So when people feel valued, you will get the best out of them and build the business. Yeah.
It's coming back from, like you say, it's a good leadership. So we could have gone all day, but I'm conscious of, I've used up a lot of your time, and you very graciously agreed to speak with me today and to be on the podcast. I really, you know, really appreciate that. Just a couple of final things. You mentioned one quite final couple of questions. You mentioned about targets there, and you've always hit targets. How do you go about, for anyone again, that, you know, targets are a difficult thing, because, you know, you had a target. I think you recently climbed Mount Kilimanjaro, which is fantastic. You know, I know we won't get into lots of detail on that, but that was a, I'm guessing you had to break down the target bit by bit there. But how do you encourage people that have got targets or goals or things they want to achieve? What's your secret to achieving that sort of success? Is there any sort of tips that you can give people?
What I would say is, like, you can have a target. You can write down that target. But if you don't believe that you are able to achieve that target, you're never going to do it. So that's got to be inherent. When you're writing your goals down, you believe that you've actually, it's done, like, it's having, I think it's more of a case of, like, kind of not just writing it down, but actually feeling that you're able to achieve that, and you kind of, there's nothing that's going to stop you. It's having that determination, resilience, and kind of...
thought process, just that inner belief, isn't it? It's inner belief that you're going to make it happen.
Yeah, and I think sometimes, and then they do say, like, with your goals, be careful of who you share them with. I have learned that because it doesn't matter how positive you are or what kind of person you're, what your drive is. If you share that with the wrong person, that can instill a limiting belief. And it's normally their limiting beliefs that they push on to you, but it can have a detrimental effect, because you think, why are they saying that? But you've just got to understand that we're all at different stages, and the difference between a fixed and a growth mindset is being, like I said, you know, you surround yourself with people that are kind of on your level and your energy, and they can reciprocate that. You know, you don't kind of share your goals and your vision with somebody that's going to, or somebody that doesn't believe in it, but it's probably, and don't take it personal, that it's probably a reflection of them as opposed to you.
Which goes back to your network comment, which is why a lot of people talk about, you know, was that other phrase that people say, you are pretty much you embody the five people that you're closest to in your life. And ultimately, if the people that you surround yourself in your network are a bit toxic or not promoting growth, yeah, and are not driving you forward, then the chances are you're not going to get to where you want to be. So sometimes it's about being able to try and elevate yourself and surround yourself, like you say, with people that have that same growth mindset and that thought process that, you know, everything can be achieved. And if we, you know, going down a pathway to make it happen, it's exciting, isn't it?
I think I was actually talking to somebody, as I said, with me, I'm the kind of person that I react. So I have, and this is why a mentor is very good for me. But what I've learned a lot over my kind of career. But what I have learned is that, again, with people with the fixed negative mindsets, generally, it's down to, as I said, a reflection of them, but there's some kind of insecurity, that there's something in them that they're insecure about. And when they see somebody that's confident and like with clear goals, because they're not like that, or they haven't, the only way that they can deal with it is
attack,
yeah. So that's what I say, like, be very careful with people that are going to bring you down or elevate you. Because it does have a lasting effect. And I think, as I said, that's one thing I've learned is, do you know what? Like, just don't share. Like, let them feed their own egos, or, like, just kind of lead them to it. Yeah. If that's what their beliefs are, then...
And the other side of that, when you have got people that then do champion you up and that do lift you up and do make you feel that, you know, and that tell you can achieve anything, it makes you feel $1 million, doesn't it? It makes you feel like you can go and take on the world.
Yeah, definitely. It does. It's just how it is. It's like that ripple effect, like I say, like why I feel that it's so important to have that culture and build that within a business, because, you know, people talk about like businesses that want to elevate and grow. And you can spend as much money as you want on your processes, technology, the marketing, branding, all that kind of stuff. But if you spend that time on leadership training, emotional intelligence,
how to train, soft skills training, people, enabling people to work better with other people, right?
Yeah. Enabling people and have that team collaboration, the ripple effect on that, like, Again, like I said, the ROI and the investment in people is going to have a profound effect than spending X amount on a marketing campaign. Yeah. As I said, like, you're creating, you're kind of creating that energy within, which then kind of
comes out to the I was saying, good external marketing begins with good internal marketing. So, which is, you know, or the other phrase I like to use, which is, you know, marketing make the promise, HR deliver the promise. So the idea being is that actually it's the marketing that might tell people actually what a team are going to be, but it's the organizational culture and team that are going to be, how do we make sure we deliver to this, and to make sure that what we actually put in front of our clients is the reflection of that. And that's always why John Lewis is so good, doesn't it? Because you go into John Lewis and their partnership team would care and they'd show that love and that attention. And when you get to any environment, any company, where you feel that everyone in the company, I was telling people about it as well, I went to to, I don't know if you've ever been to Bletchley Park. It's a really, your son, you and your son might enjoy it as a day out. It's a great place where they did the code breakers in the World War. And we went there last year, me and my wife, and the first thing the guy in the car park said, "Oh, good morning. Welcome to Bletchley Park. We're so excited to have you." And then I thought, wow, he wasn't just a person just walking into the car park. He was like, "Oh, it's so lovely to have you here with us." And he thought,
yeah,
and then you went in and everyone was this buzzing and you felt, what a brilliant place.
Do you know what? I'll tell you something, like, in terms of, you talk about John Lewis, and throughout my career, the different, I've worked at West Bromwich Building Society, I worked at Nationwide, worked at my previous company, AFH, and I'm currently, like, at Atebo. It's quite exciting at the moment because we're kind of in that growth phase of Atebo. But if I was to look at my previous three kind of major places that I've worked, in terms of, like, culture, Nationwide, oh my God, like, when I worked there, that's when I realised, like, how different, like, the service sector, and it's quite funny because my brother, he's about 12 years younger than me. When I started working at Nationwide, he started saying that, oh, since you've worked at Nationwide, you've become a Karen. I said, what do you mean? Because my expectations for client service and how people are treated, I'd see in where you were getting, it's a bit like, if you've been to the US, how the, you know, you go into a shop and the
customer service is just at that level, right?
We're not used to that. And we're like, we're not, you know, and it was like that, but Nationwide, we'll probably, I said, in terms of client, the customers and treating people, the culture is probably, not probably, it is the best, like, and that is a company that I would never have left. My only reason for leaving Nationwide was for career progression, because we kind of moved away from face-to-face and it was restricted advice and I wanted to become an IFA. But if I had the opportunity within, like, that is a business that I would never have left. Like,
yeah. Which is great. And like you say, it's when you've got companies that give you, you know, fill your heart with joy like that, it just makes you feel good. And it's like, obviously, it's what you're building with your team now at Atebo, which is great. So look, I've been speaking to you for an hour. I'd love to speak to you for more time, but I know you've got stuff to do. It's been absolutely fantastic. And so thank you so much for sharing your thoughts and your ideas and wisdom on with people around and everyone listening to you. And I hope that people are listening intently, because some of the stuff you've shared around how to engage with clients, how to build relationships, and how to really understand the other person that you're engaging with. Financial services is a tough place to sell, right? Because people are suspicious. They're a bit concerned. It's their life savings. It's their life's work that they're putting in the trust of you or your colleagues. And it does take time. So I think everything you've just described about how to build that rapport and engagement and to way to approach it is a real, you know, great thing to anyone in financial services that's listening to this. And not just in financial services, in business in general. I think everything you've said there could apply across any form of business. It's just do the right thing by the customer. Make sure that you're not focusing on you. You're focusing on what's right for them. Listen to them intently. Yeah. Be interested in them. Be curious about them. Be determined to try and help them. And, you know, those are just great skills you can use in any industry. So. Yes, so look, absolutely. Thank you so much for your time. It's been a real pleasure. Finally, final question for me: how can people reach you if people were to reach out to you online? LinkedIn's probably the best place to reach you.
LinkedIn, yeah, Bobby Sahota LinkedIn, or if they want to email me, it's bobby.sahota@atebo. So it's atebo.co.uk.
Fantastic. Well, look, I know Bobby does reply, because obviously I reached out to her and said I'd love to have you on the podcast after seeing the interview she gave with Sam. As I say, I know that you're going to be an inspiration and help to so many other people in different areas of industry that are keen to grow and become more successful as you've been. So thank you again, Bobby, for your time. We'll be at other people asking you to come back on the show. So maybe in a couple of years' time, we'll get you back on the show to share the progress that you've made since then as well. But Bobby, thanks so much again. Is really appreciated.
Thank you. Thank you for your time.
Nice to speak to you soon. Right. So there was Bobby Sahota, who, again, fantastic insights on Diary of Sales Expert on how to become a successful business person. I think in general is the best way to describe that, not just about business and sales, but just about how to build strong relationships. So my thanks to Bobby for giving up her time. Hope you enjoyed this week's episode. If you have, please like and subscribe to the podcast, share it with other people.
and we look forward to sharing another episode with you next week. Take care.
So thank you so much for listening to this episode. I hope you've enjoyed. If you have, please subscribe to the podcast. It helps us ensure more people can get the insights and ideas they need to get incredible sales results. Look forward to seeing you on the next episode.